welcome to Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm your host, Michelle Boyce, and we have a wonderful show today with some interesting people that are doing some wonderful things in our community and trying to make the world a better place for their neighborhood. We're talking about community organizing today, and we're talking about positive community organizing. That is that the way that I'm framing this conversation is that when you do organizing and your outcome is education and love and respect and all of these good things rather than, you know, organizing a rally because somebody has been shot by the police and you want somebody's head on a platter and you want somebody to go to jail. So we're talking about more positive aspects of advocating and doing community organizing here on the show. And on the show today, we have Sarah Jean Harrison and Pascal Murphy, who are two amazing individuals who are both in the faculty of Ryerson in Toronto, who have had some horrible experiences happening to them over the last year or so. And this is my interview with those two wonderful advocates and individuals.
I'm Sarah Jean Harrison.
And I'm Pascal Murphy. We live in Toronto, near Jane and Dundas. And we've lived here for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And for the last number of years, we've been flying a rainbow peace flag on our home. And we've gone through a number of different incidents regarding hate, targeted graffiti, vandalism, messaging that have to deal with the identity represented by a rainbow flag. And that has involved everything from people stealing bumper stickers off their car that say celebrate diversity, ripping them up and scattering them across the sidewalk, stealing our flags, breaking our flagpole, spray painting be happy, not gay on our sidewalk on a couple occasions, and dog feces being left on our vehicle and on our lawn a number of occasions. And just recently we woke up to our tires being slashed. Unfortunately, this has been something that has happened throughout the neighborhood. Our home has the rainbow flags up all the time, so we've received we're the primary targets, or the most consistent targets. But there was another home we connected with that fly the rainbow flag during Pride Week, and they too have had dog feces left on their place, the spray paint, be happy, not gay, on their sidewalk, and their flag stolen. There's another neighbor who's had rainbow things stolen from their property as well, and another place as well that had be happy, not gay spray painted in front of it as well. So obviously it's beyond just our single home. It's someone or some group of people targeting the homes that choose to support LGBTQ communities.
So it's more a systemic issue in the neighborhood.
Yeah, definitely. There's quite a pattern that's been developing over the last 2 years.
And nobody's ever claimed responsibility?
No. No, no one's come out and identified themselves as the local hater.
Well, you know, if somebody's that determined, one would think that they'd want some credit.
True, yeah, that's very true. Perhaps at our barbecue we'll get to meet them.
Yeah, who knows? The police are investigating this as a hate crime. So that might be a deterrent on their end.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the hate crime legislation's kind of problematic in a whole. But hopefully, we can find these individuals and get them some education.
Exactly.
That's exactly how we feel. It's not, we don't, you know, the incarceration system we're not big fans of. We are fans of education. In fact, both Sarah and I are educators. Teach at Ryerson University. I actually did my undergrad at Cambridge University College in London.
Oh, okay.
As a part of starting, in fact, the Social Justice and Peace Studies program, which I imagine you've probably heard of before, I don't know.
Very much so. So, you've had this stuff happening to you on a fairly regular basis, and you came up with a response to it.
Yeah, well, we know from our own work as activists that if you hold on to hate and anger, that's going to inform your response to the injustices you see around you. And although it might sound a little cliche, you can't fight hate. So when we connected with our neighbors, Heidi and Mike Hunter, introduced ourselves after we found our tires had been slashed and started to talk about, you know, what was going on in our neighborhood. And Ben and us, we started to feel like there was a pretty systematic pattern going on, and that we needed to come up with a collective response to this pattern that wasn't coming from a place of anger, but that was celebrating what our pride flags represent, which is of inclusion and of support and respect. So as we were talking to Heidi on their front porch, some of her friends and neighbors started to come over, and a little group is forming around us as we're talking, and the overall feeling was that what we really wanted to do was show that we weren't going to be silenced by someone's hate, and we weren't going to be scared by that. We weren't going to feel or be stopped by that. We were going to demonstrate that it didn't matter what the hater said or did, our flags were going to stay up, and we were going to work hard to make sure that this community is based on inclusion, on hate. Those discussions came with a lot of support from our neighbors and from our friends, people who were really on board, and you could feel the energy building behind those ideas. And so at first, Pascal and I suggested that we have a little barbecue on our front lawn, which in Toronto, a front lawn is about the size of a postage stamp. And we thought we're going to change the space from a space that has been the place of hate crimes to a space that is a place of celebration of inclusion. And our neighbors and friends were so for this. People were so excited by the idea of having a community barbecue. And we thought, fabulous, maybe we'll get 20, 30 people to come out, pull our barbecue around to the front. It'll be great. Within a few days, it became pretty clear to us that there was so much support for this that we were looking more around the 200-person mark than the 20-person mark, and that it was going to take a lot more than our front lawn and a barbecue to make this happen. So we started to organize with our neighbors, Heidi and Mike, and other neighbors in the community and some friends, and now we're in full swing to put on the Neighbors United for Inclusion Community Barbecue on September 14th, right across the street from our place at a high school, Runnymede Collegiate. And, we're expecting about 200 people to come out and join us. It's going to be fabulous.
It'll be so much fun.
Yeah. It's sounding like a great event. I ran and organized the Rally for Peaceful Communities in 2009 in London, where we had almost 1,000 people in the park rallying around hate crimes and gay bashing. So, you know, and it changed the city. So what are you guys hoping to change out of this?
I made the mistake of reading some of the comments after a news story on TV that was covering this. And the same mistake. The reality is the far majority were really supportive, but a few of them were just really dismissive, of course, and just really didn't get what was happening. And this is the way we understand it. We don't fly rainbow flags on our house to say, you know, hey, everyone, we identify under the rainbow. I don't really think that matters or that's not why we do it. We fly rainbow flags on our house to symbolize that we want to be a part of the Make It Better campaign, essentially, to be a part of creating an inclusive community and not to represent our sexuality or whatever. And my hope is, our hope, is that people stop seeing these issues as, meant for someone else to take on. That people don't say, oh, well, that's really for the LGBTQ community. Alphabet soup. And it's their issue. I'm sick of people saying it's their issue. It's all of our issues. And my hope is that the barbecue starts to encourage people to say, you know, how do you create a community? How do you create a community not only just community itself, but how do you create a community that is inclusive, accepting, loving, supportive, all those sort of things? And you do it by saying, this is all of our issue, not just, you know, left to a specific group of people. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually part of the barbecue. We're going to be asking people to fly rainbow flags for their house for the day. If they wish to keep them up or bring them back out at Pride Week or whatever they want to do is up to them. But my hope is, and what we've done is we've ordered 200 rainbow peace flags that we're going to make available at the barbecue. We're hoping that they just sort of pop up throughout the whole community and people start being, you know, thinking, you know, this is how you create safe space. This is how you create inclusion and acceptance and love and all those sort of wonderful things that come with community as long as people engage.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we've learned as activists in particular around this issue is that you have to work to make the space you want to live in. You have to work to make the world the place you want to live in, you know. If you allow the haters to have their voice be the only voice, then our space becomes a place based on that hate. If you don't step up and say that's not what we want, this is what we want instead, we want a place of safe space and inclusion, then it's not going to happen. And I think one of those things we really want to see is that our neighbors and our community start to make that really active step to ensure that this is a safe, inclusive neighborhood. And hopefully other neighborhoods start to do that as well. And like Pascal said, it's not someone else's issue. This isn't an issue just for the village, you know, Church and Wellesley in Toronto. This is an issue for every neighborhood in Toronto and every community in Canada. So one of the things we really hope to see is people flying the rainbow flag in our neighborhood for that day, but also people from different neighborhoods and different cities doing the same thing. And we've had so much support from people in different cities that we're hoping to see photos posted on Facebook and other places showing that people are flying their rainbow flag on the 14th as well. And while they might not be able to be a part of our community barbecue, they're supporting us from afar anyways. And, in fact, what's been really exciting is we've connected with two other groups of people in Kingston and in Bancroft who have experienced hate crimes this summer as well around the Pride flag. And they've been very supportive and very happy.
And their identity.
Yeah, yeah. Very happy about what we're doing here. And the folks from Bancroft are actually going to be joining us at our barbecue, which is pretty amazing because that's a long drive.
That's wonderful. And mm-hmm. And you guys are doing great advocacy work there in Toronto. Is there anything else you want to say?
Well, we've just got our posters back here, and I love how we've named ourselves. This is essentially what we've written on our poster. Choose to answer hate with love, violence with celebration, and discrimination with inclusion. We are neighbors, united for inclusion.
Aw, isn't that perfect?
Yeah, pretty.
We like it.
Yeah.
So there's two pretty amazing people that have had their tires slashed, their stuff stolen, spray paint, the whole nine yards, and rather than getting angry, they chose to answer hate with love, violence with celebration, and discrimination with inclusion. And what we've found with these kinds of campaigns and community organizing through the past and through various other events that we have run, that they've been extremely successful in changing mindsets and educating the public and actually making a difference in so many people's lives. Whereas, you know, grabbing a perpetrator and throwing them behind bars and, you know, throwing away the key or throwing the criminal justice system at them is, it's not restorative justice. It's not building a community. It's not building people. And that's the message behind these kind of advocacy programs and community building. You know, and, you know, I've had a lot of academic kickback on these concepts, and those of us that have run these kind of campaigns have quite often had considerable kickback from community that we're wasting our time, that we're not doing anything productive, that we're just making problems and you know, getting people all worked up over nothing. But what we've found through numerous of these kind of campaigns is that that's not the experience at all. And I mean, I ran a similar campaign back in 2009, where, for those that don't remember, there was two gay guys that left a birthday party for one of the individuals, and they were attacked from behind from an unknown assailant on their way walking home from the birthday party, and one of the individuals was injured quite severely, and the perpetrators ran away, and eventually the police caught one of them. But that's not the big part of the story. The big part of the story was the rally and the coming together of the community. And here's a little snippet from that rally, and yours truly was the MC, and here's a little bit of that.
Everybody's been asking me, why a rally? And the answer is, because we need to send a message. And we need to send a message loud and clear to those in this community that think perpetrating hate and violence is okay. We are London. We are a peaceful community. And as a peaceful community, we do not accept hate and violence for any reason. No. Those that come into our city, you are welcome. Please, please respect our values. Please, please come into our city and enjoy the businesses that we have to offer, the educational facilities, the best in the world, our hospitals, our parks, our tourism, our city. We have a lot to offer. But if you don't respect our values, we will send you home. Yeah. First up on our list, we have the Honorable Mayor, Anne DeCicco Best. Please give her a warm welcome.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I have two of my colleagues that are also here, Councillors Roger Crancy and Steve Orser, if maybe you want to acknowledge them as well. And members of the police service will introduce in just a moment. I appreciate the invitation to be here today, and I am, of course, as your mayor here, but also as a member of the Police Services Board for the past 13 years. And maybe more importantly than that, I'm a Londoner. And I've grown up in this city and have seen a lot of changes. And when I first decided that I was going to run for council, and certainly in my years as your mayor, I've always believed that this is the kind of community where we focused on issues like job diversity, making sure people could live a great life, having strong neighborhoods, making sure that, as Michelle said, that we had great health care and education and all the things that make a city the best that it can possibly be. And part of that is to be a safe city. And I don't want my London or your London to be a place where someone is walking down the street and needs to look over their shoulder. I don't want our London to be a place where people are afraid to be in their neighborhood or in a place of business. The acts of violence that we've seen in particular over the last couple of weeks, but I would say at any time, are reprehensible, they are appalling, and they are unacceptable. And they are not the kinds of things that if we continue to work as a community that we can't stop, because I think that we can. It's been our commitment and our mandate as a police service to work with our community and our council, but I think it's broader than that, to work with the community at large in making sure that we understand that we all have a role to play if we want London to be the best and the safest city anywhere. That's the commitment that I made a long time ago. It's the commitment that I want to reiterate again here today. I think that it's all of us that have to continue to be vigilant on these issues, to continue to work with the police, and to continue to work with each other. And I'm sure that if we do that, there will be a day where we will stamp out this type of violence against anyone, anyone in our community that can walk the streets and know that they don't have to look behind them.
And, you know, that's the former mayor of London, and I want to remind her that some of us don't walk the streets. Some of us ride on the streets in wheelchairs and other devices. But, you know, E for effort. But the message there is the same, and that is that, you know, these campaigns where we bring community awareness and, you know, come together as a community to drive out the hate and to make it socially unacceptable. And I think that is the key to these campaigns. And you know, you can't have a rainbow flag, unfortunately, in the picture without somebody bringing up religious connotations. And next week's show is on that topic, and it's Why God Doesn't Hate You, and it's titled after a book by a wonderful author, Tia, who has done over a year of research on these subjects, and Tia Passando and her book is coming out next year, titled "Why God Doesn't Hate You." And you know, while I was talking to her about next week's show, I asked her for her opinions on the rally and the community barbecue coming up, and here's her two bits.
I was thinking of Winston Churchill's quote: "Do you have any enemies? Good. That means you've stood up for something in your life." And the fact that they're taking this loving approach rather than a countermeasure kind of approach to getting angry about it means they're countering negativity with positivity. And that is really the only hope for Christianity, too, because of late, I mean, in the post-9/11 environment, there has been this anger responded with anger in kind. And, the 9/11 was responded to with the attack on Iraq, that kind of thing. As such, it creates a sort of crusade image that makes Christians look no better than those who are assaulting them. So they can't feel like the victims anymore. That's not even important. What's important is that they be true to the love, which is the basis of Christ's message and of the Christian faith. So I believe those two who are throwing the barbecue are providing an excellent example for us all.
And that's a beautiful way of looking at it. And I mean, we just had the president of or prime minister of Australia come out and support equality of marriage in Australia with a very similar message about about Christianity and love and all of the great things. But you want to hear more about that, Tia is on next week's show, and it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful show, Why God Doesn't Hate You. And, you know, here in Toronto, southwestern Ontario, southern Ontario, there's a wonderful individual named Heather Jarvis who, you know, she, a few years ago, I guess a year and a half ago now, we had that Toronto police officer who perpetrated more rape culture. And, you know, with rape culture being in the news so much lately, it's, and how we're calling out the behavior and how society has again come to the viewpoint that it's completely unacceptable to practice that behavior. We have once again had a brilliant advocate, Heather Jarvis, who built Slutwalk. And we'll be back with more comments and a clip from her after this break.
We are all in this together.
Welcome back to Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after on CHRW 94.9 FM. I am your host, Michelle Boyce, and Bailey Lamont is back in the studio next week to co-host with me, so we're all really happy that Bailey's going to be back on the show. And so we're talking about positive community organizing, and you know what that means to me is that this is when we run rallies and events and other stuff that allows us to put a positive spin on a negative event. And the Neighbors United for Inclusion are having their barbecue this Saturday, September 14th at 11:30 a.m. in Toronto at the Runnymede Collegiate Institute. And they're asking everybody to, and that's at 569 Jane Street for those of you in Toronto. And the barbecue is free, the music is live, and there is plenty of time to hear from and connect with your community. You can also pick up free rainbow flags there. They've got 200 of them going to the first 200 people that ask, and they are asking everybody across Canada to fly the rainbow flag this Saturday in support for inclusion and equality, regardless of whether you identify under the rainbow or not. So what a beautiful message. And they say, we chose to answer hate with love, violence for celebration, and discrimination with inclusion. And one of the people that started a movement just like this that turned absolutely international was Heather Jarvis and Slutwalk. And I talked to her before Slutwalk ever happened and became the phenomenal that it is. And here's Heather before Slutwalk ever hit the streets.
Hi, I'm Heather Jarvis. I am a queer, sex, body positive feminist. I have experience in gender and sexuality studies, social work, community activism, and I've been pissed off by this. So I'm a co-founder of Slutwalk Toronto, and this really did spring out of, unofficial frustration. It was really just connecting with the other co-founder, Sonia Barnett, who you emailed initially, connecting with her through online media, through Facebook, Twitter, and we were both outraged upon hearing that this Toronto police officer encourage women not to dress like sluts so as not to be victimized. We were both outraged, and really it sprang out of that about, let's do something. Okay, where do we start? So it really was very unplanned, very, some people might say very organic, but it really, that's how it came about. And then the name sort of just to Sony one day about Slutwalk. So it's taken a couple weeks since it's happened because we really want to have, we feel like we want to have a strong, respectful but directed position on what we want and where we're coming from. So pretty much where we're at now is it's angry. We're frustrated at the Toronto Police as a protective service, that they're continuing to slut shame people and make people at risk of sexual assault or survivors of sexual assault feel blamed and feel deserving of this. These stereotypes and myths that are completely inaccurate. It's not about what you wear. It's not about how you look, because there are too many cases that completely blow that out of the water. So we're angry and demanding that an apology is not enough. An apology, a written apology, and, you know, the vague statement of, yes, the officer has reprimanded, is not enough. It's a bigger issue. So we decided to unite with people, go to Toronto headquarters, their front door, and tell them what we think. So we're trying to ask for more transparency, better training, better education. We don't want to say, we just hate the police, let's scrap them out of this equation. That's unrealistic. We're angry, but we want to say, do better. And we want to see if we can make that happen, or push it to happen.
And then she took Slut Walk, and it became an international phenomenon happening in practically every organized country in the world. And what an amazing education that has brought rape culture to the forefront. And you know, probably there's a couple of universities, one on the east and one on the west, that really wish that it wasn't so brought to the forefront, since, you know, they seem to think Fresh Week was all about rape culture. But, you know, that's another news story. So another community organizer and good friend of mine is Lavender Menace, who has been doing amazing work here in the city of London. Now she's headed out to the East Coast to take care of her family, and I caught her on the phone out there talking about the advocacy work that she did around an incident she experienced, and here's Lav for you.
So on April 10th of 2010, I was coming home from like a lesbian night on the town. I had organized lesbian speed dating, and then Hunter Valentine were playing at Collie Office, so it was a grand time, and I was coming home fairly late with my friend Amanda Wand, and we had come through the back way, like through Victoria Park by Central High School, and Amanda had lived at Central and Waterloo at that time. So while we approached the sidewalk, there was a car coming, and, you know, we were friends. There wasn't like we were partners or holding hands or sharing intimacy or anything like that. And this car had driven by and yelled some obscenities at first, like targeted against women. Well, they were misogynistic and homophobic names that they were calling us. And so we laughed at first, because that happens quite frequently, like probably I could even say like every night that you go out, well, up to that point. And then the car U-turned, and it ended up being that the entire two blocks, we ended up having to run, but the car U-turned about five times, and they were screaming at us every time. A beer bottle was thrown out of the window at us that had shattered on the curb, and like I got cut on my legs, and they pulled up onto the sidewalk at one point, and my friend Amanda like went to wrench out and say, you know, leave us alone, and they pulled forward when she was in her motion, and she fell on the ground, and they laughed at her, and it got to the point of being really terrifying, and we didn't know what was going to happen, so she said, I'm calling the police on her cell phone, and that's when they took off. And so the police officer, we were able to get the license plate, and the police officer showed up about 20 minutes later, and we gave the report, and that's what started the whole, I guess, official process.
Great, but you didn't exactly take the approach of, hey, let's grab these kids and throw them in jail, throw away the key. That was not your approach that you took to this.
No, I would never do that. It started, well, at first I was angry. We did have the license plate, and when the officer, she had said, when we were telling her about this, oh, yeah, that car is registered at, by Queens, or somewhere in the neighborhood about a couple blocks away, oh, William and something. And so she said it'd be probable that that happened because the car was so close, and she had also went to talk to the young men before she talked to us. it ended up being three young men in the vehicle. And so she went to the driver's house, and he had said, like, yes, we did that, and had named the two other individuals. But the two other individuals had denied that that had happened. So the police had said that it was a closed investigation at that point, essentially, that they could prove nothing or didn't believe me. And that's when I'd already been involved with community organizing, so I reached out. I gave a detailed account of my experience, and I emailed it to all my contacts in the community. And I thought that was kind of a way to let go, because I was really shaken by it, and I'm not used to feeling powerless or defenseless. And I initially wanted to have a protest in the area where the driver lived to bring to as a warning to the community to say that you have a hateful individual in this area. And so then, with talking to friends, they had calmed me down and checked myself, and we had decided to rather do a love action rather than me bringing awareness to the community that there's this individual in there, because that would also be ostracizing. We had switched to a love action. And so on the corner where Amanda lived and where our hate crime had ended, and the law was very, they stressed that it wasn't a hate crime, because it can't be a hate crime, but I refused then and now to call it anything but. So we gathered and put love into the area. I think we had about 100 people, and we were just all in different corners, and we had colorful signs that had positive slogans on them, and that was our first love action.
You went through this process yourself,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
and you had more than one love action.
Yeah, so that's what started, and I thought that was good, but then my investigation was reopened, and I had another officer who came to talk with me about it. So I think it was about 3 weeks before the head of the hate crime unit, Detective Gregory May, had come to talk to me. And that encounter kind of made me feel that there was more work to do, and I also knew, like, I needed personal healing. But Detective Gregory May brought three letters that were from the young men, apology letters. And they were well written, but they left me more angry. And Detective Gregory May and I, for about an hour and a half, talked on my porch at the time, and I was trying to see about alternative options, because it was quite clear that nothing was going to happen with the police, and that it's not like I wanted something over the other. I wanted something that would work. And so he kind of dismissed anything that I wanted to do, which is what I ended up doing with meeting with these young men. He told me, like, well, you know, that's just not how it's done, and I should really back off. Like, haven't I caused these young men enough strife? Because the one who pressed did cover the article, and he said that they were remorseful and they were crying, so that's enough. And I said no. And that, you know, like, is there sensitivity training or anything that these young men can get? And he had said no. So a couple of my friends who work in the social service industry, I had asked them if we could organize a meeting with these young men. So that would be at Changing Ways, which deals with men and violence. And so Trevor Hines, Michelle Patton are both employees at Changing Ways, and Meredith Frazier was the head of LUSO's anti-hate, anti-bias program at the time. And so I got their okay that they would be open to facilitating a conversation with us. And then I wrote a response to the young men, and just saying that, hey, you know, I think your actions, well, I appreciate that you gave me an apology, and I want to continue that by us meeting, because I think your actions are part of, like, societal breakdown or the creation of masculinity, what have you, the matrix of domination. And so I wrote those letters, and I knew that they went to Central High School, because that had come out with, I had a friend who had gone to school with their older brothers. And so I wrote this letter inviting them for a conversation and that they would talk to Meredith Frazier. She would be the in-between person to arrange that. And I went to Central High School at their lunchtime to give these letters to the office. And the secretary who was there, she right away knew what had happened. She's like, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm so sorry, and I'll get the principal for you. And so the principal wasn't available, and the vice principal came out. And because the incident happened at early Sunday morning, she put her hands up right away when I went to hand the letter. And it's like, well, I can't be involved in that. Like, that wasn't during school time, la, la, la. And so, again, it was like another person of authority who was kind of telling me, like, this isn't right. But then I had to show her the letters that they had written me, and I was like, you know, I'm just delivering them back. Like, I could do it through the police. That's fine. And but she eventually took them, and then two out of the three young men agreed to meet. And so the hate crime was in April, and our meeting was in the middle of June. June had come up, and yeah, go to Changing Ways, which is in a beautiful building, a very tall, wide wood staircase. And it was the first moment I just kind of collapsed when I was about to walk up there. And I didn't think I could go through with it. And I remember Michelle Ben was coming down the hall, and she had some food, and then she just dropped everything and just wrapped me in her arms and took me in and kind of like concentrated on grounding, and then so I probably made young men wait about 15 minutes before coming in, which I was, that's all I was worried about at the time, like, oh, you know, I'm not going to get myself together. But they came in and they sat beside each other, and I was in between Michelle Patton and Mira Frazier, and we started with introductions, and right away the driver was present, and he had said, hey, you know, my name is whatever, and I just want you to let you know I am so sorry, and my car is a safe space now, like, nothing comes in that's offensive and nothing goes out that's offensive, and that's what he wanted to know immediately. So that made me a little more hopeful for the conversation, that he was articulating the concept of safe space before we even started. And then I think the entire conversation took about an hour and a half, and it was amazing. Like, Meredith, I'd wanted, just because I didn't know if I'd be able to express myself, she was there to cover how, well, the matrix of domination and oppression. Michelle Patton was there to talk specifically about misogyny and what happens to women, or why women are oppressed and how so, and then Trevor was there to talk about the effects for men. And that was, it was so great to watch, because Trevor had said, well, they had gone out that night, and they had started at 11 o'clock at night, and our encounter was at 3 in the morning. And so they had been street harassing people for, I guess, 5 hours. And Trevor really opened it up by saying, well, who did you, you know, who were you yelling at? And he ended up talking with them, because they had said, you know, well, my aunt is lesbian, like, I'm not homophobic, over and over again. And what really brought it home, I thought, observing, was when he said, well, who are you yelling at and who are you throwing things at all night? And it was people of color, people with disabilities, and queers. So that, I don't know, really changed it for honest conversations. And at the end, we all hugged, and I felt amazing. I still, one of the young men I took a shine to, and he is, has become an athlete in a national league, so it's really nice to see what he's doing. You know, I check in every once in a while, and I'll cheer for him when I'm watching those games. But I do think their lives are changed, and I don't think they would have gone on to university or sports, whatnot, and participated in anything like negative hazing, you know, something like that just happened at St. Mary's University. I feel certain that those young men would not do something like that ever again.
So there was this incident that's been happening for the last year in Toronto where there's this couple that have been flying the flag, the rainbow flag, and they've been vandalized and their flag stolen, etc. And you're familiar with the story. And
yeah.
And, you know, and I talked to them and they're organizing this community barbecue to bring the community together. And what are your thoughts about that?
I'm sad that the incident happened. And Pascal was actually one of my first mentors when I was developing my activist conscience. So I used to hear a lot of people say to me, like, well, you know, that sucks what happened to you, but I'm so happy that it happened to you because these things happened. And I kind of feel like I get that now with it happening to Pascal. I haven't met his partner, but I think, like, that's brought so much attention to it. And further, to get the community involved, I think that's the beauty of what they're really doing, because it's not against individuals. It's every time there's a hate crime, I don't care which minority it's against, I feel it. And I think it's showing the world, or I guess Canada, that it's not just individuals anymore, it's a whole community. And there's talk in London about, on the day of, people putting their own pride flags in there that can't attend. So I think there's a lot of that, I don't know, it's not, like, there's one element of the things going on in Russia about, you know, when queers are bashed back. And I feel that righteous rage, but I don't think it's as effective as showing examples of love, being mentors, being role models, and getting community involved. I think it's the only thing that works. And, even feeling so much anger against the young men who had perpetrated violence against me, I wouldn't want them to be in prison and having that violence perpetuated on them. Like, that's a circle that's never ending. And I think by different examples of love, that's a nice way, it's the proper way to do it.
Talk to a bunch of academics via email, trying to get academics that have done a lot of work on community organizing, and and I've been actually shocked by some of the responses that I've gotten, and I mean, one of them in particular is an academic that talks of, or does a lot of work on community organizing, and she's written a lot of papers on it and that, and I'm not going to identify her, but she says that this incident in Toronto and this barbecue is not community organizing in the sense that she would teach it to her students, and that there's no political dimension to it. And I've gotten this from a lot of people on this, and I'm confused by this as a concept, because I know you had a lot of kickback when you told people what you wanted to do. You know, you kind of pioneered this approach in London, and, you know, nobody had really seen this love thy attacker concept.
I know that, like, Dr. Barbara Perry had spent a year doing interviews. She teamed up with EGAL, which is the only national queer organization in Canada, to focus on hate crimes and in their studies. So I was a participant in that, and they've made a movie out of it, I think called Courage Under Fire, which I might have that wrong. But so that initial video focused on Ontario, and I, out of hundreds of people who had experienced it, I was the only one with a positive outcome. And I think it was positive for myself as well as the community, because we did continue to have events and be visible under the idea of love because of that. And I, before we even had the first love action, I received over 200 emails of people sharing their stories, sharing about being a kid or knowing a kid and them not being able to do something. And so, like, I do think it's real change. it'd be difficult to comment on the academic saying that it's not true justice, but, or I don't know. I think restorative justice is what would be loving the attacker or community response, but I don't know if it's not happening that often or if it's not, I guess, a copywritten idea, then from an academic standpoint, it doesn't exist, or I don't know. But I think they should be more open. I mean, open to anything that is creating positive change.
Oh, yeah, and she even attacked my my title being positive community organizing, and she's like, there's nothing like that that exists.
Well, I think maybe they're jaded. Like, I've moved from London, and that was very much, like, I felt I could do anything. Like, we even organized a Safe Patrick's Day last year where we went around to local bars and got the women, I guess, social service agencies together to hand out their cards with statistics on, you know, like sexual assault. That was our focus, was sexual assault on St. Patrick's Day and making the community safe. And that was really wonderful to, like, we met. My sister's place opened up their doors for us to have our weekly meetings, and Changing Ways was involved as well, and all their logos are on these cards, and it gave tips to do if you're a bystander, it gets tips if you're triggered, tips if something's happening in front of you, like, so that was really amazing, and there was a lot of, everybody wanted to be involved, but when it came down to a week before, it was the boards or people saying, like, oh, well, we can't really do that. And another example was HALO, the Homophile Association of London, Ontario. When they sued Diane Haskett, and then the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal did side in their favor, but because the law for not-for-profits said something like you cannot be more than 30% political, and it was that action that had to be done, but HALO lost their funding from that, the provincial funding, and so it was a slow demise to eventually having to, I can't think of the word right now, but when you have to end your organization. So, I don't know. Like, part of, like, our institutions, like the university, I don't think, there's that, just that example at Western this week for Frosch, and that the, and their students, and that the security wanted to get them off of the premises because they had these for sale signs saying tuition. So they were protesting against tuition hikes, which I remember I did 10 years ago at university, and it hasn't stopped. But to remove those students who pay their tuition and they have freedom of expression, they were removed from campus because there was a all-week Frosch event going on that they were disturbing. Like, I don't know. I think there's so many supports to prevent genuine dialogue or prevent the creative alternatives that are really what make the difference.
I agree with you. And I mean, just the Charity Act that doesn't allow corporation or charities to engage in more than 1% of political activities. And
right, and what does that mean? I think that is a paramount problem. And then we do look to these organizations for help, but they are very limited. And that's why I would for sure say, like, what Pascal's doing, that's phenomenal. And it's affecting people all over the country.
And as you see, positive community advocacy, positive community organizing definitely works, does the job, gets the job done. And whether it's an international campaign or whether it's a local campaign that goes international, I think we've proven our point today on the show. And absolutely good luck to Sarah and Pascal and their barbecue and changing their community and making it the kind of community that they want to see. And, you know, everybody else out there, you know, when you have events happen to you and you want to do something about it, maybe look at a more positive approach to community organizing and you know, taking the perspective from love. And this has been Between the Margins. Thanks to my guests, Sarah Jean Harrison, Pascal Murphy, Lavender Menace, Tia Pisando, and all of the other people on the show. And catch us on our blogs and our website at www.betweenthemargins.ca next